the man with the game information. Game and Steve, Game and Steve. Xbox, Nintendo, PC, or PlayStation. Game and Steve, Game and Steve. Giving the news to the next generation. Game and Steve. Give me news,
give me news,
give me views,
give me views.
Game and Steve,
Game and Steve. He got games.
What's to see?
What's to see?
What's to me?
What's to me?
Game and Steve,
Game and Steve. He got games.
Tell me how. Tell me now.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for the hardest working man in the game industry, the one-man vortex of gaming information, the man who is Gordon Freeman's thesis advisor at MIT. Ladies and gentlemen, Gaming Steve!
Hey there, welcome to Gaming Steve, the home of intelligent game discussion. I'm your host, Steve Glicker, and in this week's show, we go through the latest gaming news. I go through what I've been playing, what I've been up to, and some hints as to next week's big show. And then I go through some show mail. So with that, let's get into the show.
Gaming news! Gaming news!
So there was a fair amount of big news items this week. I don't even know what order to go in, but I'll start off with Nintendo announcing in their earnings report that they're going to be launching the NX in March 2017. In addition, they have pushed back the latest Zelda game to 2017, and it's going to come out for the Nintendo NX and the Wii U simultaneously. They also said that they were not going to be showing the Nintendo NX at E3, which was pretty stunning because everyone expected to see it. And on top of that, they also said that at E3, they were going to show only one game, and that was Zelda, and that's it. So there was a lot there, so let me get into each one. So the first one, I guess, in random order, we'll do E3. We'll kind of go backwards. So E3, so something, if you've never been to E3, is Nintendo actually has one of the greatest booths at E3 every year. They do a really good job with the booth. It's always open. They have nice stations. They have fun things in the booth. They used to have really fun giveaways. I still have like a banana from a Donkey Kong game. Like that one was from Atlanta. Like that's how long ago that one was. So like really long time ago. They have little keychains and things like that. I have a whole drawer full of tchotchkes that they gave out. And they also have a lot of their games on display, and it's a good booth. It's usually very, very crowded. There's usually long lines, especially they would always release and show their upcoming systems and their games. And of all the booths that consistently were crowded and had, I'd say on average, they always had a very good showing, it would be Nintendo. They would at the very least, they would have a very good showing to fantastic or excellent. Some others are all over the place, Microsoft and basically Sony, they've been all over the place with their showings. So saying that they are going to have, and their booth is gigantic. They're like, there's the three largest booths and theirs is one of them. And they're going to say that's all they're going to show is one game in their booth is kind of devastating. Because, first of all, their booth is really big. So they usually have a dozen to even two dozen games or more being shown at their booth. So that's a lot of screens for just one single game. And, the Zelda game actually never plays that great in a conference setting anyhow because, you just do a small level or something. So, and the Zelda game is a Zelda game. It's like, oh, okay, you get to shoot and kill a monster. And they usually have different, things you could explore. There's a menu, and then you can say, okay, do I want to do a boss battle? Do I want to do a town quest? Or do I just want to explore? There's usually two or three options. And it's always the same, because it's Zelda. If you played one Zelda game, you've kind of seen them all. This is the sum is greater than the whole of its parts. When you buy and play a Zelda game, you know what to expect, and it's sort of putting it all together that makes the Zelda game what's so great. So I have a feeling, I do not know how good this show is going to be for them. I don't know if they're planning on maybe doing some cool giveaways or giving out fake Zelda swords or something, especially if they're not showing the Nintendo NX or even hinting at it. I'm kind of stunned. And maybe for the first time ever, they're going to have kind of a turd of a show. I guess we'll find out. As for the Nintendo NX, You have to generate some hype. I agree. Let's see. It's in June. So June 2016 for a March 2017 worldwide release. Maybe it is a little bit too soon. They probably don't want to get caught up, and or maybe they just want to see what Sony and Microsoft's doing and sort of hold their cards to the chest. Maybe they're also figuring out who their demographic is, which I'll get to way later in show mail, what that means. Right now, Nintendo's gathering a lot of information, and maybe they're figuring out how they want to launch this. There could be a lot of reasons. But, you know, Nintendo is an incredibly, I would say, conservative company. Definitely of the three, but even in general, they're a conservative company. None of this surprises me, but being this conservative is a little shocking just because E3, the whole point of E3 is to sort of go in with guns blazing. I don't even know what they're going to show at their conference because I'm looking at their upcoming schedule and they have almost nothing coming out. They have Mario and Sonic, Rio, 2016 Olympic Games, Paper Mario Color Splash, Legend of Zelda, Project Giant Robot, Pokemon. Okay, Pokemon, they'll probably show that. That's kind of it. Oh, Dragon Quest. All right, they have Dragon Quest coming out. But there's... And Metroid Prime and the Kirby. But those are coming out later this year. Disney Art Academy, Pokemon Rumble World. There's not a lot coming out. I mean, that's the entire year. What's that, like 5 or 6 games? We know that the cycle's winding down, and this is sort of it for the Nintendo Wii U. However, I will say there's still a gazillion good games out from the Nintendo Wii U. Something else they announced is that the Fire Emblem and Animal Crossing are coming out for mobile devices sometime this fall. Their latest game that they came out for mobile, their very first one, the... what is it? Mitimo? Is that how you pronounce it? Mitimo is doing really, really well. It has over 4 million, from what I last heard, active players. It makes $280,000 a week. You know, considering how easy it is to develop these games for mobile, as opposed to, I don't know, coming up with an entire console and an entire infrastructure and supporting that entire infrastructure just to come out with your games. That's why people have been saying... For so long, Nintendo, you really should follow the Marvel and Disney model. You have all these amazing properties. You are making, you know, you're only distributing it through your own single distribution model, which is your own game consoles. And I know they're very conservative, and they really hold everything really close to their chest. But and you know who also did this? Disney and Marvel did this. Marvel almost went out of business. They actually went bankrupt because of this, which is hard to believe now considering how much they're worth. Is that, you know, they were only publishing, you know, comic books. Yeah, they did a few cheesy 70 TV shows and things like that. But nothing compared to, you know, the value of Spider-Man and Hulk and the Avengers and everyone else in the MCU is worth so much money as a property. Nintendo is doing the same thing. They have so many properties. They're worth billions and billions and billions of dollars. And if they just break out of their mold of only supporting their own devices, I'm not saying that they should come out for the Sony PlayStation or Nintendo. I'm saying they should be coming out for mobile. And they should be making theme parks, which they're actually starting to do, and making movies, which they might start to do. You know, that's where all the money is really at. And I'm not sure how much more Nintendo keeps reinforcing the brand. We get it. You know what? I grew up with Nintendo. My kids are growing up with Nintendo. There's a lot of us out there now. There's 2 to 3 generations that know Nintendo. So maybe start, you know, exploiting the brand a little bit more, because if you just keep down this path and the Nintendo NX is a failure like the Wii U, there might not be any brand left. So I know it was a little rambling, but it's sort of, you see where I'm getting at, is that they're being a little too conservative in my opinion. And the Fire Emblem and Animal Crossing, very smart of those, of two games to come out with. Fire Emblem's doing really, really well. It did extremely, the last version did amazing on the DS. Animal Crossing has always done well. Both port to mobile really well, both screen size as well as functionality. You could pick up and play. You could expand them forever. both games. Fire Emblem just keep adding more quests, more options. Animal Crossing, obviously. So, you know, I'm actually more excited of all the announcements. That's the most exciting thing, is actually Fire Emblem for my iPhone. That's what I want to get. So next up, let's change topics. There's a lot of Blizzard talk. There's actually going to be a lot of Blizzard talk for the next few weeks. Let's go through in random order. The biggest change in World of Warcraft Legion is there's a new gold cap. So they went from 999,999 gold to 9 million gold, basically 10 million. 10 million gold doesn't seem like that big a deal, except if you go to the auction houses and the guild banks, running up to 900, or we'll just call it a million. A million gold versus 10 million gold. A million gold is easy to get in this game. The inflation has gotten out of control for a long time in World of Warcraft. Whether this is going to make the inflation worse, not exactly sure, but it seems like it was something that was necessary for those of you who have gold out there. Let's see. Next is, Hearthstone Whispers of the Old Gods just was released. If you log into Hearthstone, you immediately get three free packs, and then you can do some quests, and you get two games. You win two games of standard, you get some packs, and then if you win seven games in standard, you get more packs. So I would recommend you go in. I just got all my free packs as well as a few more. The game has definitely changed. It's a big expansion in the sense that the meta of the game has changed quite significantly. I might bore some of you real quick if you don't play Magic the Gathering, but I'll kind of put in Magic the Gathering terms. So I also play a lot of Magic the Gathering, and in Magic the Gathering, there's sort of the metas, and there's different types of decks. There's sort of the two big ones are the control deck, which is usually blue, which plays kind of a very slow game and tries to control the board and then kills you at the end using different various means. And then there's sort of the rush or the speed decks. Right now, World of Warcraft has kind of gone, the meta has gone to rush decks, a lot of very fast decks, a lot of hunter decks. There's a little bit of everything, but there's a lot of rush decks. I myself play a hunter rush deck. I like it a lot. I've been playing it pretty much since the inception. As soon as the expansion came out, between the nerfs and the way the game just plays, it's very hard to play a rush deck. It just sort of has gone bye-bye. The game is just much slower, and it worked. They definitely are changing the meta. However, it is definitely fun if you can get C'Thun into your deck. I killed someone with 44 C'Thun, which was awesome. The only downside is they always know it's coming, and if you're up ahead, I guess it's good too. As soon as they can see the C'Thun building, as soon as you're up to 10 mana, I've had many, many people just quit, and they just concede before I can even cast it out, which is the whole point. You want to see C'Thun do the insane amount of damage and wipe out their whole board. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's a lot of fun. I would definitely check out Hearthstone. You know, of all the collectible card games out there, it's definitely one of the best ones, especially online. It's fast, it's easy. They've definitely shaken up the game significantly with this expansion in many ways. Battle cries are huge now. The game is overall slower. There's definitely a lot more random elements to the game, which some people won't like, but I kind of like it. It's kind of fun. And next up is Blizzard again. They break their silence on Nostralis, is that how you pronounce it? The WoW server. So this was a server that was being privately run that had what we call vanilla WoW on it. And there was about 800,000 people playing this vanilla WoW server. Blizzard took them to court. They got an injunction. It had to get shut down. And it was shut down. A lot of people were very, very upset about this. And they've been asking for a long time, why can't you just have a vanilla WoW server? And people just don't quite get it. Like, well, Blizzard, why can't you do it? Look how easy it is for someone to do this. Why can't we do it? First of all, I have to hand whoever this guy is or these people who made their own WoW server, I really have to give you a hand. That is pretty insane that they had the ability to do that. However, it is a big, big, big difference between running one little itty-bitty server using stolen code by itself that it doesn't integrate with anything else as to running a vanilla WoW server that's part of the entire Blizzard network. They said Blizzard's been looking at this for a long time. They've been discussing it for a very long time, but classic servers for years. And it is as complex as you think it might be. And multiply that by 100 and then multiply it again by another 1,000. It is really, really, really hard for them to add a classic type of server. And I'll get into it why. Let's start down the path. If they wanted to add a classic server, first of all, okay, now you have a different instance of the game running, which might not sound like a big deal, but that is a big deal because think about all the various new features they've been adding to the games over the years. And not just the big patches. We're talking all the minor patches and the hot fixes. Those are thousands and thousands of patches. And when they patch a game, it's not one patch. It has to go to all the languages. I think the average patch is something like 90 patches. So one is actually 90 patches. So they have all these patches they have to either fix or undo so it'll work with Vanilla WoW. Because it's not truly Vanilla WoW. It has to be Vanilla WoW that still works with their current environment. Something else is all the code that they've been writing to this date, they've been putting in things assuming that they're moving forward, not going backwards. So to suddenly say, okay, take this game and make it look and work the same way as it did 12 years ago, it's very hard to go back and redo all that code. We're talking just gargantuan amounts of code that have to be rewritten. And then you have to have that server still hook into the infrastructure of Blizzard. It has to go into the account system, the backend admin system, the billing, obviously all the support. It has to be able to support multiple countries, multiple languages. It has to also, when they do future patches, and if there's hot fixes, are they going to have to do the hot fix on the vanilla server only or the live servers? You can go on and on. What about cross realms? How is that going to be working? What about when you're buying things like, you know, characters and levels or mounts or pets? How does that work between the two servers? It basically divides your game into two separate games. And the size and complexity of WoW is immense. You probably can look for it online. It's top secret, but I've seen pictures of it online, and I saw it in one documentary a long time ago, is that Blizzard, near their entrance of their offices, they have this like this headquarters that has the worldwide, it's this really big dark room, and it looks like War Games. Imagine the War Games War Room, where you have all those monitors on the screen, and you have dozens of rows of computers and people sitting at it. And that's where they sit, and they monitor all the worldwide connections for all their games, mostly World of Warcraft. Now it's changed, but all this is going on, and there's people in there 24/7, and it looks like War Games, and it's as big as War Games, and it is crazy as War Games. There's a lot of signs that say "Do not photo," and it's top secret. Also, even when you walk around the offices, they have little monitors showing everywhere. Where last time I was there, they had little monitors showing worldwide a map of the world and showing what's up and what wasn't up. So the complexity of keeping World of Warcraft and Battle.net up is monumental. And this just adds, it's like basically almost launching a new game and supporting it. Now, 800,000 people is a lot of people, but I don't know if that's enough people to warrant the amount of investment and then continuing maintenance of a vanilla server. It just really isn't that feasible. I just don't see how they could do it without, you know, they can kind of probably fake it by taking the current game and swapping out assets. But again, you know, people aren't asking for a server that's simplified. They want it to be exactly what the game used to be. And, okay, maybe you can go in and say, all right, let's take a 1.0 server, let's take the game from the original state and just put it somewhere and silo it, make it its own game, it's not built into the infrastructure, they can sign in, it has a different pay structure, something like that. Yeah, you that actually is probably the way to do it, if there was any way to do it, is that they sort of make it its own entity. But again, it still has to go into the accounting system, the admin, the billing, and the support system. Like, that has to go in no matter what. And that's already integrated. So do they separate out all the back-end features, all the back-end functionality? It's much more complex than you could ever imagine. And I just don't see it ever happening. They're going to talk about it forever. I'll give them credit, though. They have mentioned that they've even thought of ways to get it outside and have outside people running the servers. But again, I don't see how even that's possible because, again, it's one thing to run it like on your own, as a lark, but it's another thing to actually then start charging money for it and actually having support and legal liability. And then finally, and then I'll stop, is why did they break it? Or sorry, why did they shut down that server? It's very simple. They had to protect their IP. They had to protect their intellectual property. And the way the law works is that if you don't protect your intellectual property, and then years go by, and then someone does something with it, and you try to shut them down, if you have a history of not protecting your intellectual property, it's going to be very hard, or it will get harder and harder the more relaxed you are with it to enforce your copyright. That's how it works. If you basically have a copyright and you never enforce it, and then come out of nowhere and sue someone, you will have a hard time winning, because they'll have, well, what about the 500 times you didn't, you know, enforce it? And why is this one case special? You can't pick and choose. You really either have to keep your shield up at all times or not. So this is never going to end. I mean, Blizzard's always going to fight these things, and they're right. Next up, Hunger Games, Pulp Fiction, and more games are on Steam. So things like Hunger Games, Twilight, the Saw series, other Lion Gate films like Pulp Fiction, Kill Bill movies, Hurt Locker, Cabin in the Woods, American Psycho, This is Spinal Tap, Leprechaun, Back to the Hood is also out. That was terrible. Why? I guess, why not? People buy and see things on everything now. I'm always amazed, like, when people are using Netflix on their Nintendo DS. Yeah, I've actually done it once or twice. It's funky, but you can do it. You know, it might as well. If they can make a little bit of money, might as well do it. I've seen, actually, there was that one Dota documentary on Steam. It wasn't terrible. I mean, I watch Netflix on my computer, so it's not really any different than that. But it's weird. It's like people seem to like things siloed, which is also why I think Xbox One has some issues. It's like, in theory, having every single thing in one area and one device sounds awesome. But really, people like their devices to be really good at what they do. You know, whether it's viewing movies or driving a car or reading email, you know, it's like you want your device to do exactly what it does and do it really, really well. And sort of these all together combined devices just never seem to work out that great. Although, hey man, if you're out there buying movies on Steam, let me know what you think. Next, Amazon Prime is selling certain games exclusively to Prime members only. So a lot of people couldn't even believe this was happening. I saw a lot of posts and forums last week that people were saying, this has to be a mistake, there's no way they're doing this. But sure enough, that if you tried to buy Grand Theft Auto 5 or Fallout 4 recently, I think it was last week, you couldn't. You could only buy them if you were an Amazon Prime member. Again, doesn't really surprise me. Amazon is, if they're really, really good at finding out who is going to buy what, because they know what their top sellers are. And hey, you might as well gate it, make it not possible for people to buy it, and say, look, join Prime. Already something like half of America is on Prime, which is amazing and yet doesn't surprise me at the same time. I mean, I'm on Prime. I probably buy something from Amazon 1 to 2 times a week. They definitely lose money on me on shipping big time. So I don't understand people who, you know, if you're going to be buying things on Amazon even a small amount of time, you probably want to do Prime. It'll make it up for itself in no time, especially if you buy more than 10 things. But Amazon's really good for buying games. They have 20% off all new purchases, not just the day it comes out, but I think it's like the next 2 weeks as well. So, you know, again, I could get it if you don't have enough money to join Prime, but really they're trying to just increase their Prime numbers. And Amazon, it seems kind of like a not nice move, to use the vulgar vernacular, that they're just kind of being a pain in the ass. But yeah, they can do this as much as they want. I'm actually not surprised that they do this. And if you're getting blocked out, let me know. I don't know. I'm on Amazon Prime, but there you go. Next up. So StarCraft II Champion was indicted in a second match-fixing probe in South Korea. So it turns out that this guy, Lee Life, Sang-hyu, he got roughly $60,000 to intentionally lose two matches in May of 2015. And there was another person, I'll totally mispronounce his name, Byung, He was paid about $26,000 to throw one this January. And it looks like, you know, these guys have gotten bans. There were six others. There was also a 10-time tournament champion and so forth. So people, again, what I like to do is read these news items and then actually see the comments, what people are thinking about it. A lot of people were thinking, well, who cares? Like, what's the big deal? Well, it actually is fascinating because you can bet. I mean, whether you agree that esports is a thing or not, it is a thing, you know? I was, you know, the same way is like, why does polo not receive any attention as a sport, but yet baseball does? You know, why does, I can't even think, lacrosse not do as well as basketball? Who knows? You know, these are just the whims of human nature. Well, right now, esports, it's interesting. It's doing really well. You have Twitch selling for $1 billion. You have YouTube doing it. You have ESPN and other major people starting to get into it. People like it. And I remember, and if you go back to way back my earliest Gaming Steves from like 10 years ago, I myself was poo-pooing esports. It seemed so weird, like watching people play video games. Yet, when done correctly and when it is interesting, it's just as exciting as watching, you know, professional sports. Now, to call it a sport is where I think a lot of people have an issue because it's not really physical. It's more mental. But, I mean, that's semantics. I don't know what you would call it. E-gaming, e-video games. You got to call it something. And someone came up with e-sport and it's sort of stuck. So that's kind of what it's going to be. But the whole point of this is that there's bets because StarCraft II is so big that you can bet on how pros are going to do, just like you can bet on professional sports. And when there's betting involved and money involved and price fixing, then people start to pay attention and people start to go to jail. And this will be not the last we hear of this. That is, if you look at any sport that is sort of coming into the mainstream, there were always histories of these types of things happening. So there's always histories of price fixing where they have the Black Sox. You go back even further. All these sports have this. And this is sort of its coming of age, if you will. It's like, wow, what do you know? Esports are starting to come into the mainstream to the point that people are now doing price fixing. Not price fixing, but fixing for the games and who's going to win and who's going to lose, who's going to throw matches. And it looks like that there was someone who actually bet on these guys losing and won $87,000. So there you go. And I wouldn't be surprised we see that in America sometime soon because, you know, right now it's not really regulated that closely. There's a lot of gray area in esports, and whether or not someone's going to win or lose is, you know, it's pretty nebulous. Next up, The Elder Scrolls Legends finally arrives in beta. So this was shown at E3, and it is a Hearthstone competitor, if you will. And it's so funny. It's like, you'll say what you will about Blizzard and the Blizzard magic and the way they can polish things to death. The way Hearthstone works is so well done. It's really scary how amazingly polished, and just even the way they have the soft edges and the animations and just the beauty of the game, and that it really makes it pleasing to the eye when you're watching it. If you look at Hearthstone's Legends, it looks okay, but does it look any real different than Hex or any of the other 10,000 collectible card games that are out there? Not really. You know, it's sort of, it just looks like, oh, what do you know, hard edges with really rough art. Not rough, it's beautiful art, but it's very striking, you know, art with white text on black backgrounds. It just sort of looks all so serious. And I'll play it, and I'll try it, and unless the game is absolutely fantastic and has a lot of depth, it's probably going to go the way of all these other collectible card games. It's funny, the Hearthstone comes around, Blizzard makes this game. Everyone was poo-pooing it in the beginning. I remember a lot of people were thinking, I have friends in Blizzard, sorry, in the Wizards community and in Magic the Gathering, and they all thought, whatever, you know, like it's not a real game. It will never have the depth and complexity of Magic. It just won't be there. And yet, then it comes out and it gets 20 million, then 30 million, then 40 million. It's 2 years old and now has 50 million people playing the game. 50 million. That is a absolutely monstrous amount of people. That is serious money. That is serious eyeballs. And that's serious presence. It's always in the top in Twitch. It's, you know, competing in esports. People are, you know, covering it. When the new expansion came out, it was everywhere. I mean, I was seeing it in magazines and online section and online forums and things that never cover video games. And they were talking about it, which just shows you that, you know what that means? That means that there's someone who works there. Maybe it's like Forbes and someone likes, you know, playing Hearthstone and probably a few other editors. And they're like, you know what? I like the story. I'm going to write about it. And that's really what matters, is that if you get into the public zeitgeist like that, then you're going to get, you know, you're going to become part of popular culture, and then everyone's going to talk about it, even if it's outside of the realm of normal news, like, you know, outside gaming. So Elder Scrolls Legends, I definitely want to try it. It sort of had a weird system where there's like two boards. You have like a left side and a right side, and the two have to fight each other. That's something else. It's like these games are very, very hard to come up with something original. It's nearly impossible. And, you know, I'll be curious to see how it plays. Next up, there's going to be another Borderlands, says Gearbox. There's going to be a Borderlands 3. No big surprise. I don't even know what they're going to call it. They announced this at PAX today. The weird thing I found about this story is they said they're right now they're focusing on Battleborn. And then when they're done with Battleborn, they're going to move to Borderlands 3. That alone was very concerning. They say, what do you mean you're going to be done with Battleborn? Battleborn is supposed to be an ongoing game. It's like a Dota, or, you know, it's the type of game that, with in theory, you continuously update and maintain forever. It's not a, you build the game, you release it, and you're done. So if that's, that actually affected me a lot more than anything else they said. I was like, you know what, I might not be buying it now, because I don't want to buy a game, just play it, and then have no balance or changes or updates to it over years. Maybe I misunderstood, or he didn't really mean to say it the way he did, but I would think that Battleborn would be, I don't know, kind of like Overwatch is going to be. Is that a game that's going to continuously evolve and develop over years that you want to continuously play, and not a, you know, the game comes out and it's never really updated or supported ever again. I could think of a countless number of MMOs that I've played over the years that I start playing and then they never change it and I drop out because, you know, like, okay, I've seen all the content, I'm done. So, and of course they're coming out with another Borderlands. Borderlands do really, really well. I will say they kind of need to change the formula. Borderlands 2 was great. I have all the downloads, some of those. Actually, the DLC is better than most of the main game. The next one was not that great. It sort of was like same old, same old. If they do another one, the third one, that's exactly the same. Yeah, they need to mix it up a little. They need to sort of the way they went from Borderlands 1 to 2. It was a big, big change. They seem to do the same thing. Next up, we got Dark Souls, the board game. It was kickstarted. It broke $1 million in 24 hours. Last I checked, there was over 16,000 backers and over $2.5 million pledged to the game, and still like 2-3 weeks left to go. The board game is fascinating because it costs $113 plus shipping just to get the regular game. But I've been seeing this a lot, is that no one knows anything about it. And this is one of the reasons why Kickstarter is so popular, especially for established brands. Have you ever noticed, I want you to look right now, take a look at all the DVDs that you own. And how many of those do you have you ever watched? And the answer is probably, if you're average American, less than half. Or if you have watched them, you've watched them once and then never again. There's this thing where people want to feel connected to the things they love. And that was really a big price point with DVDs when they brought them down to like $8, $9. It's like, sure, I can sell this DVD for $50 or even $25. But you know what? People who like this movie, like if I like the movie Flash Gordon, just for example, you know, I want to be connected to the movie, and I just know real way to be connected to it, but I can buy it. And, oh, it's $5. All right, I'm going to buy this movie and have it in my house, both as a badge to show people that I like this movie and to feel more connected to it because I like it. And that's really what all iconography and branding and sports memorabilia, I can go on and on about this, and now even gaming is turning into. So you have this thing, Dark Souls, which is really popular in America. There's not a lot of popular culture or outside, not popular culture, but there's not a lot of culture outside of the games themselves. It's not like you can go out and buy Dark Souls cereal or watch the cartoon or anything. So here is the only other way you can really connect to the Dark Souls universe is buying a board game, which is pretty cool in its own right. So yeah, the Kickstarter does really, really well because now you can be connected. I wonder how many people will buy the game, get it, put it in their closet, and never, ever play it. And they're just using it more as a trophy. And I bet you it's going to be like 80%+. The vast majority will actually probably never, ever play the game. They just want to get it because they're connected to it. And again, this leads me back to even like Nintendo and, you know, outsourcing their IPs more. That people just want to be connected to the intellectual properties, whether it's through board games or through breakfast cereals, or through anything. You got to be careful. You don't want to oversaturate the market because that happens, like, I don't know, Star Wars. I mean, you can buy, I mean, seriously, look it up. You can buy Star Wars dispensing tape. Seriously. There's everything you can imagine in the Star Wars universe you could buy. Yet they seem to sell it all. But, I definitely would be curious. You know, there's been some precedents of this. There's the Doom board game. There was the, I've never played it. I think, wasn't there like a StarCraft and World of Warcraft board games that were just gargantuanly huge that took 1 billion years to play? I'm pretty sure. I'm trying to remember. I might be confusing. There's a couple out there. Might be confusing that with some other video game board games. Obviously, there's the WoW MMO. Not MMO. Yeah, the WoW MMO. No, the WoW collectible card game. But that's completely different. Next up, we have Amazon is selling Uncharted 4 early. Supposedly that there was this is where it gets strange. Sony did a soft delay of Uncharted 4. It looks like the game was finished and it was supposed to come out on April 26th, but they pushed it back to May 10th. But the game was done. And in another story, that Uncharted 4 shipment was stolen inside the UK. And about 10,000 plus copies were stolen off a truck and were being sold on eBay and other black market areas if you wanted to buy it and play the game early. So this is sort of a double mix-up, is that that the game was, looks like, maybe accidentally released to people on Amazon because some people said it was shipped to them and they got it. And then also it was stolen. I've seen this happen before. I've seen when they actually still ship the games to the retailers and that they actually have the street date change. You know, there's a lot of retailers out there. There's a lot of people who don't read all the memos. These people are human after all. And they just put it out on the wrong day. So I'm not completely stunned that this has happened. I've seen this happen in Best Buy. Every so often I will go to Best Buy and check out, it doesn't really happen on EB Games or any of those places, but like Best Buy and some of the other ones, or Target, I will once in a while go and see a game that's not supposed to be out, that's out a few days early. It's not incredibly common, but it's more common than you might think, but 4 weeks is significant. The thing is that Sony, if they really wanted to, I'm wondering what they're going to do, they can stop these games from playing. It's when they go online, they can just check to see if they're trying to play Uncharted 4. They can release a patch. I mean, there's a lot of things they can do and just lock people out from playing this game if they really wanted to. Obviously, if you never go online, you can play PlayStation 4. You can play Uncharted 4. I'm sure people would find out and they would post. So maybe it's not worth the effort. But if you are a big Uncharted fan, which I am, they said, be careful of spoilers online. There's going to be some pretty big changes in the game, and just be careful what you read in the next few days. So is that it for news? That's it for news. So yeah, I'm done with news. Let's go to what I've been up to, and then we'll go to show mail. Yeah, baby, I'm talking about Game Talk. So here's some game talk and talking about what I've been up to, what I've been playing, a few other things. So I've been playing well, recently, a lot of Hearthstone. That is sort of what my game du jour the last few days. Been building a couple of Cthulhu decks. For those of you who don't know, the way it works is there's this card called Cthulhu. It's the most expensive card you can play. It's a 10-mana card. And it starts off very weak. And then there's other cards that can make it more and more powerful. And as you continuously make it more and more powerful, your opponent will see how powerful it gets. They'll never know if you actually have it or not, but it can get very scary very quickly. And then by the time when you cast it, it does all of its attack damage on the turn you cast it randomly to all of the player's minions and then the player themselves. It's not insta-death, but it's close. I actually did play a game yesterday that I got my Cthulhu out, and it was a 14-14, and then my opponent got his Cthulhu out as a 16-16, but we were both priests, so we were both still very much alive. And we went three full turns with our Cthulhus trading with each other. And I would heal mine up to the point that he couldn't kill it and vice versa. So it was the first and probably last time in a long time I'll actually see two Cthulhu go on the board at the same time and survive more than one or two turns. It also seems to end a lot of games very quickly. In Magic, these things are called bombs, where they're just huge beasts that can end the games very quickly. And this one is really, this is the bomb of the bomb. And it is possible to actually get Cthulhu to go and then cast all of its damage twice. I've done it a few times, so again, my highest was 44 damage yesterday, which was against a warrior who had something like 40 hit points and armor, but then killed him in one turn, and it was quite sweet. I've been playing that. Another game that came out that I would strongly recommend, if you're into older games and into really hardcore hard games, Battlezone 98. It was just released on Steam. It was redone. Yes, this game is 16 years old. Yes, you've probably never heard of it, but it is an excellent, excellent game. I'll tell you about it. Back in 1998, there was a game that also came out right around the same time. Probably heard of it. It's called StarCraft. And this Battlezone game took me away from playing StarCraft. That's how good it was. It's a weird, weird game. And back then, a lot of games were really weird for the PC. The genres were all mixed up. There wasn't any one type of game. It just sort of was the Wild West. And this one is, you are first-person shooter, plus you can drive tanks, and it has base building in a 3D world on the moon. So, yeah, it's really strange, but it works, and it works really well. So, there's two factions, the United States and there's Russia, and as you might imagine, you have a base, and you can run around on foot on the moon, but you really don't want to do that. There's tanks that you can jump into. They all have strengths, they all have weaknesses. So not only are you driving your tank and defending your base, and you have to support the guys who go get your resources, the harvesters to get the resources, like in any RTS, but you also have to go out and kill everyone who's trying to kill your guys. So it's both kind of a first-person shooter. On top of that, since you have no gravity and you're driving these huge tanks, driving your tanks is really fun. It's sort of like the closest thing I actually came to is if you've ever driven a wave runner on the ocean, it nearly feels identical. It's kind of silly. I actually got so good at Battlezone and was so good at driving the tank, and then I went on vacation, and the first time ever I was on a wave runner, and I was like maneuvering it perfectly because it felt identical. It was the first time ever like the muscle memory of a video game perfectly synced with something in real life, and I was so excited. And it's a cheap game. It's rough. I'm going to tell you right now, there's a few things. One, the graphics, it's funny. Watch the video. It's like, here's what the graphics look like before, and they look terrible. It's like, here's what the graphics look like now, and now they just look sort of terrible. So they didn't really improve it significantly. It looks okay. It's fine. It's like a $15 or $12 game, but you can get a lot. It's a lot of fun. The other thing, right, the base building, I forgot. So the base building, yeah, so you are in the tank, and then while you're in the tank, you can issue commands to your base where you have to build buildings and then place them down onto the landscape. So it's really cool. It's a 3D, I've never seen anyone really do that since, a 3D base building game where you are literally the commander having the base built around you. So if you ever wanted to be a unit in an RTS game, kind of like a ghost, you know, if you would, that is a very strong unit that controls a lot, then this is your game. I will warn you, it is hard. And I mean, like, everyone's like, oh, Dark Souls. Dark Souls is so hard. Dark Souls. No, play this game, all right? Dark Souls is a joke compared to this game. This game is tough. It will take you a while. You can play the first mission and die in 3 minutes, 20 times in a row, easy. It's very, very unforgiving. I'm probably putting some of you off, but again, there is fun to be had. You can even play multiplayer. You can fight other people. It's a great game. I strongly recommend it, especially if you're into a challenge, into something weird, something you can brag that you've played than no one else. You can see the reviews online or out of sight. Everyone who's played in the day like me are saying the same things. So I would definitely check that one out. The other one that I was playing a lot is Endless Legend. So for those of you who don't know what Endless Legend is, it's a really good, it's a 4X game. It's been around for a couple of years. It's one of the best 4X games ever made. And they continuously update and add new factions to it. A new faction was just added called the Shifters. If you've played Civilization, you know how to play, you know, Endless Legend. There's actually some really good guides out there that say, oh, if you play Civilization, how to play Endless Legend. I'm trying to remember, it's by Amplitude Studios, I believe, is Endless Legend. It's funny that all of their games have the word endless in them. So it's Endless Space, Endless Legend, it's just endless everything. And the game, what makes it so much fun, if you've played MMOs, if you've been playing 4X games, is the factions. The factions are really, really different from each other. There are significantly different ways to play the game. There's your vanilla faction. There's a faction that uses death as a commodity. There's a faction where you can build one city, just one. That's it. You don't have 50 cities like you normally have in Civilization. You just have one city, and it's an absolutely gigantic city. You have another faction that uses gold as the resource for everything. They don't have food. They have gold. So that one is, you know, some of those are pretty tough to play. The Shifters, I really like the Shifters. They're very powerful. There's a summer season and a winter season. And in the new game, winter's really brutal. Winter makes the game very, very hard. But the Shifters are great in the winter. They have all these special abilities. And they actually can take a big advantage over the nastiness of the winter. The game's also absolutely beautiful. It's a gorgeous game. If you like 4X games, this game comes on sale every so often. I would strongly recommend it. If you like Civilization, I would strongly recommend it. And other than that, I'm just waiting for the Overwatch open beta next week. If anyone wants to play, I'll be playing quite a bit. I am not amazing like some people are. I'm pretty good. I'll say I'm pretty good at shooters. I'm not the god level of some people who spend, you know, 10-hour days all day playing. But after playing them for most of my life, I'm decent, I will say. But if you guys want to hook up, get 20% extra experience, you can look me up. Just direct, I don't want to send all my info out on Blizzard, but just direct message me and I'll give you my info and you can friend me online. And yeah, that's kind of it for gaming right now. Oh, and I did download, one more. Pathfinder Adventures. I'm actually a huge Pathfinder D&D guy. I play Pathfinder with my friends every week. I've been DMing for over 30 plus years. We do it online, doing the 20 Pro. I'm actually putting them through the Emerald Spire right now, my group. And this is a card game, kind of a card game of Dungeons & Dragons, but it's called Pathfinder. It just came out. It's by Obsidian. So, you know, the guys who did Stick of Truth and stuff, real studio, they know what they're doing. The game looks gorgeous. It's free. It's for the iPad. I think it's for Android too. Just came out yesterday. So I would check it out. I tried it a little bit. It looks beautiful. The game it is based off of is a card game that's really good. So the source material is excellent. Everything Paizo does is great. So definitely check that one out. And I'll probably have more next week. And with that, I'll go to show mail.
Show mail!
So first up, in show mail this week. And again, if you have any questions, you can send me on Twitter. You can send me at feedback@gamingsteve.com or contact@gamingsteve, either one will work. And as long as your question is not crazy and silly, I'll read it on the air. So we have Zombie Shakespeare. He wrote, what do you think Blizzard's being so resistant to build a vanilla WoW server? Well, I kind of went in over that already, so I won't really reiterate all of that, but it is really, really hard, really, really complex, really, really expensive, requires a ton of maintenance, and they probably wouldn't make their money back, so that's why. Next up, I have, let's see, who wrote this? It's Rob Way, who wrote back, let's see, what is Nintendo doing with the massive amount of data generated by Mitomo? I bet some companies would pay to data mine that database. So Mitomo, the mobile game that Nintendo came out with, is, first of all, as I said before, it's doing really well, has 4 million plus active players, makes $280,000 a week. But they ask you a lot of really great questions, so much so that people are noticing that they probably are doing better data mining than even Facebook is doing. Let me tell you, Facebook has some of the best data mining I've ever seen, ever. But they're asking very sensitive and interesting questions, like what type of pizza do you like? What's your favorite way to exercise? How do you relieve stress? They're even asking things about, like, your cultural preferences, which is really, really hard to get. They're asking things about what you buy, your personality, your friends. It is a fascinating that they're able to get this information from you, and then they're collecting it. And they actually go out and even say, there's a screen where they hint, there's a hint screen saying that, oh, we're just keeping this information between us, that we don't share anything. So, yeah, what do they? I didn't read the EULA. I couldn't find it online. I wanted to read in detail the EULA that you have to sign to sign up for this app and what they can and can't do with the data. My guess is this is not new to Nintendo. If you remember back in the Wii, there was some weird channels that I'm probably the only person ever used, although I always wonder who else these other people were, called Wii Votes. There's a very popular one where you would vote every day on, do you like hamburgers or hot dogs? And like the entire world would vote. And then it would show the voting patterns of everyone in the world. They had a lot of things like this where they would get cultural and informational data. And they could data mine this stuff. They've been doing this since the Wii. Not the Wii U, the Wii. So Nintendo secretly has been doing this for a very, very long time. And they were doing it sort of more anonymously in sort of a game-like fashion. Now they're actually going out and data mining this directly. What they're going to do with this, I do not know. But, once again, to reiterate the point, they're probably, I'm going to just guess here. If I'm going to guess, they're probably right now using it just for internal purposes so that they know how to make and market the NX. If you go back and look at the history, not so much, they made a huge mistake with the Wii U, big time. They totally misrepresented that and didn't expect the tablet market to tank as quickly as it did. But the Wii was a massive success. And it was such a massive success, it's because they focused on a market that no one was focusing on. At the time, when the Wii came out, they were focusing on the mothers and the fathers and the non-gamers and the grandparents. And it worked. It worked like gangbusters. They sold over 100 million Wii units. They couldn't keep those things in stock. And it did amazing. And then they had Wii Exercise. And they had all these weird games that no one in Sony or Microsoft would ever have thought of in a million years. And a lot of that, I think, had to do coming from the data mining that they did. And they figured out this untapped market. Well, there's not so much that's not known. It's very hard to do that more than once, even in a generation. You just can't sort of just popped in and capture a segment of the market that no one else was capturing. Sony and Microsoft, as well as anyone who does mobile development, is very aware. Now, mobile development has sort of taken where Nintendo started and has blossomed it. Nintendo was sort of the first one to get sort of non-gamers into the gaming space, and then the mobile has taken that and run with it big time. Nintendo really does well with those type of people, and I feel like they're just using it for internal purposes so that they know how to make and market their games to their what they consider key audience or the audiences they want to buy the Nintendo NX. However, if you look at Facebook, just had their quarterly earnings. Facebook, I do online, you know, I build online communities and consulting for a living, so I know the stuff real well. I mean, Facebook is something. Let me tell you, if you ever wanted to run an ad campaign, and if you wanted to target someone who just likes tattoos, who lives just in your community, no problem. Facebook can do that. They can drill down to the most microscopic level and give and deliver your ads to exactly who you wanted to deliver to. And that is why they're doing so well. And it works. Let me tell you, I've done campaigns on there, and it works really, really well. If Microsoft is doing the same thing, they could, in theory, turn Mitmo or any of their games into ad online platforms and then start doing the same thing and saying, hey, we now have, they have 4 million people. Let's say they get to 10 million. It's not nothing. It's like, okay, we have 10 million people that are very dedicated who play this game a lot every single day, and we're going to start putting ads in the games, and they start advertising and start selling these ads. They can make a lot of money, a lot, especially if it's that targeted advertising. I mean, that's where all advertising is going, is real specific targeting advertising as opposed to blanket advertising like in the old days. So if, again, Nintendo is one of these companies that is just sitting on a gold mine of opportunities. They have unique IPs that no one else has that's been ingrained in our culture for 30 years. They're amazing at data mining, yet they never seem to do anything with it. They're starting to finally release, you know, online games, and they only have one out, but yet it's already done phenomenally well. If they wanted to, they can turn on the spigot and just start crushing it and making tons of money, yet they seem to be hesitant to. We call it, I've heard this saying before at VC meetings, it's called kicking and screaming to the money tree. That they are literally kicking and screaming that they don't want all this money. They don't want to have all this money and all this success. No, 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 no. And you have to drag them by their heels to make all this money and success. So there's my long answer there. And then finally, I have one more question, which was from Dustin Green. He says, not so much a question, but love to know more details on Titan that you hinted in the last podcast. So that is where I will leave you, is that next week I am going to do a podcast on everything I know and everything I have heard over the years. I have been to Blizzard many times. I have friends who are there. I will tell you about my experiences with Blizzard, playing some of the games in their alpha or pre-alpha states, like WoW and Warcraft 3, and tell you what that was like. Tell you about, you know, my experiences there. In addition, I'm going to tell you what I know about Titan, and I actually know a lot. I'll tell you about Titan. Most of it's already been said outside through other sources. Most of the sources are correct. There's also other things out there, how Titan influenced Overwatch. There is, you know, Overwatch, no secret, it's been said many times in many places, was built on the bones of Titan. I'll explain that in a little bit more detail. And something else, everyone wonders, like, if Titan will ever come out. It is coming out. It's called Overwatch. It is a small portion of what Titan was, but it is actually part of what Titan was. So, and I'll explain that. So next week, if you guys even have specific questions, let me know. I'll try to answer them. I do know quite a bit. I've spoken to many people on the team. They've told me many interesting things, and I will share with you what I can. So with that, let's wrap up the show.
Steve's final thoughts.
So again, thanks everyone for coming in and listening. Don't forget, next week I will be doing my big Blizzard, WoW, Overwatch, Titan reminiscence. If you have any questions you'd want answered, you can contact me at contact@gamingsteve, or I'm on Twitter at gamingsteve. At Facebook as well. And also there's a forum. If you go to GamingSteve.com, go to the forum and register. And I'm there as well. There's lots of ways to get in touch with me. So if you have any questions in general or questions about Titan or anything else, send me a line. If you want to play next week in Overwatch, send me a line as well. Be happy to play with you and see how we do. Other than that, I will talk to you next week. Have a good gaming week. I will talk to you later. See ya.
Question or comment for Steve, please drop him a line at GamingSteve.com. You've been listening to Gaming Steve. Until next week, just remember, all your base are belong to Steve.